Blog Talk Radio.
The first thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind but Mama tried. The one and only rebel child from a family meek and mild, my Mama seemed to know what lay in store. Despite all my Sunday learning, towards the bad I kept on turning, till Mama couldn't hold me anymore. I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried. Mama tried, Mama tried to raise me better, but her pleading I denied. That leaves only me to blame, 'cause Mama tried. Dear old daddy, rest his soul, left my mom a heavy load. She tried so very hard to fill his shoes, working hours without rest, wanted me to have the best. She tried to raise me right, but I refused. And I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried. Mama tried, Mama tried to raise me better, but her pleading I denied. That leaves only me to blame, 'cause Mama tried.
Hey, this is Your Mother's Medicine Cabinet, and that was Merle Haggard's Mama Tried. Brought to you by the Literary Underground and whatever, how many people are involved. I forget who's next week, so we'll just get on to this week. This week, we have Bill Gaynor, so instead of me telling you all about him, let's bring him on and have him talk about him. Bill, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm good, man. How about you? Well, except I got this head cold, but other than that, I'm good, you know.
That's good to hear, man. Nothing, just sitting back, trying to enjoy the night.
Cold up there?
Yeah, sure as hell, man. It's like 16 degrees or something like that.
Oh, no good. It's getting cold here, too, man. It's getting to be snow time.
Yeah. Oh, it snows out in that part where you live?
Yeah, I live up in the mountains.
Oh, all right.
I live kind of in between Sacramento and Reno, Nevada. So it's it gets very cold and snowy here.
Yeah. So let's just get into it. When did all this like come about for you? Is this like been something you've been doing since you were young, or?
Oh yeah, I've been doing this forever. You know, I've been doing this since the '60s. You know, on and off. You know, I quit writing for a while. I got pissed off about things and the way things were going, and so I quit writing for a little while, a few years, and then I got back into it. You know, and people just started snapping me up again, so I loved it. You know, been going, you know, doing shows, putting on shows, promoting people, promoting other people, publishing books, all that stuff. You know.
Cool. What's this thing that you always are? Do you run that, was it Poetry with Legs or something like that?
I kind of host a couple of readings. I got down in Sacramento, I host two nights a month at a joint called The Shine. And I got a reading series down there called Poetry with Legs. And we have a ball down there trying to make it a nice, comfortable, safe place, you know, for everybody. We got good crowds, lots of open mic people, and bring in a couple of features. And we have, like I said, we have a good time. We're starting to get ready to line it up for next year. And we're just, you know, finishing up this year. So you know, I started doing that with a guy named Dave Bowles. He's the the publisher of Primal Urge magazine. I was editing for him, and he wanted to do something connected with the magazine to try to promote the magazine. And, you know, doing a reading didn't really, because he was doing a lot of other stuff, not just poems, you know. But it didn't really help promote any sales with the magazine, so he just kind of gave it up, and I kept going with it, you know. And we've been doing it for a couple of years now. Yeah, we were on the list there. We got nominated for the best reading series in Sacramento last year, so that was pretty cool by one of the local newspapers.
Nice. So is the Primal Urge, are you an ongoing editor there, or is that just something you do once in a while?
When he was doing print copy, I was doing just the poem sections, you know. And then, you know, it's like any other small press. I don't know if you've ever seen the Primal Urge, but he did a really nice job. I mean, it was like Life magazine or something, man. It's all full color, you know, and lots of fantastic art. It was pretty avant-garde, and he liked to focus on a lot of political and spiritual stuff, this Dave's Racket, you know. He's one of them Zen Buddhist guys. So, you know, my thing was, you know, that's not an area I wanted to go with the poem. So he just gave me a free hand, so it was really, really good relationship, you know. Now he's doing it online, more as a blog. You know, he ran out of dough is what happened, and so he's doing it online, and more, like I said, more as a blog, and I just read it. I don't contribute to it anymore. So, you know, that's just
That seems to be what all the magazines are tended to go towards now is the online thing, or print on demand, or something
that's kind of the legacy of the small press. Anyway, it always has been, man. You print till the money runs out, you know, and so. If you can get 4 or 5 issues in, you've done good. You know, I got the little press, R.L. Crow, you know, and we've done great over the years, and I can't complain, but we just do books, you know, we just do working poets, so that works out really good.
You know, I got some of those books from you, and according to Andrew Lopez, we read at Jack London's Whorehouse or something like that. That place, and I got a few of those books, and they're good books, and is that something you're doing all the time, or just some, like, you just select some people once in a while, or?
Well, the R.L. Crow, we print, you know, 1 or 2 books a year. We don't do a lot. And we only deal with working poets, you know, and people that are out there hitting the bricks, because I can't sell anybody's books, you know. You can't sell anybody's books, but the writer can, you know, so. If you're out there doing, you know, 25, 30 readings a year and making a lot of noise in your neighborhood, you know, you can sell some books. So those are the guys we work with, and I hate to say that because it kind of excludes a lot of the emerging people, but, you know, there's other ways people can get their wings, you know.
Yeah, I hear that. So I read your book with a crushing hangover on a plane flight back up here from San Francisco. It kept me from being sick. It was an outstanding book. I like your short delivery. Do you want to read us or three of them?
I'll read you a couple of them. What the heck, you know? Yeah, the little book. It's done well. That was from Red Alice Press. It was an experiment, and it worked out well. We're gonna do more of them. So anyway, let me read you the Stonecutter's Ball. I want the inscription on my headstone to simply read, "Beat ya." Actually, I want it to read, "Beat ya, now fuck off." But I'm not sure the Stonecutter has the balls to go down in immortality with me like that. So maybe we should just put, "Fuck off." So, there you go, Stonecutter's balls. How about connecting with God? I do my praying in the shower. Seem to get better reception there. I'm feeling the need now. Join me. It's a small shower. You can kneel first. We'll do one more. Sex with old people. When you get to the moist spot, there's a good chance somebody peed. There you go.
Yeah. Have you always been doing the smaller poems? Because well, I've only heard you read the small ones and have read only the small ones.
I do across the board, you know. And but mostly, I love the short poem. It's the hardest poem to write, you know. You got to get in and get out, and you got to kind of know the language a little bit, you know. So you don't have a lot of time to mess around. And so I really enjoy them. And that goes back again to the 60s, you know. And one of my favorite guys has always been Richard Brautigan, you know. And he's always worked with brevity, you know, short pieces. And I go from there. And then, you know, Michael McClure used to do short stuff, you know, in his early days. His stuff is a little goofy now. But I used to love those guys, you know. So, and... that's kind of where I go with that stuff, you know. But I'm often more recognized for my longer pieces, you know. Those are the ones I win contests and stuff like that with, you know, which always surprises me. Somebody gives me something, you know.
So did you want to read a longer piece at all? Or?
Well, whatever you want me to do, man. I'm here for you tonight, you know. I'm doped up on my cold medicine and drinking coffee here and relaxing and get stuff all over the place. We can talk about anything. We can read poems, you know, whatever you want to do.
Hey, yeah, read the long poem. Read a long poem.
I'll read a little longer poem. This is probably, I don't know, maybe 30 lines, short lines, so, you know. It's called, I've been reading this one around a little bit lately. It's, I've been having fun with it. It's called Apologies for a Love Poem. Your secrets are always yours, kid. And yes, I miss you. And yes, I really liked having coffee the other night, any night. And yes, I had to look to the streetlights to catch my breath, too. So we're even, kid. Don't be mad. It's just a poem. Maybe it caught a moment, only a moment. Sometimes we can't help it. They arrive, unexplained, unexpected, those moments. And we think they're not supposed to, not to me, I'm different, immune, but they do happen. And you get lost in a kiss, and you don't want anyone to know. No one will. I like your secrets, and we'll keep them forever. Don't be mad.
Nice, man.
I like love poems, you know. People don't like the print love poems anymore, you know. Too mushy for them, I guess.
No, I like
get a little
I like them
life,
when they're well written. Some of them are a bit too mushy, but I like them when they're well written. That's a good one. So do you have like books out that have the longer poems in them?
Well, I did Roxy, I don't know, about 10 years ago with a couple of guys, a couple of friends of mine, and that had some longer pieces in it, you know, but they were mostly fun pieces, you know. It's there's a copy of it laying around here or something. There it is. And I had a ball with it, you know. It made a ton of money for us, you know. But it was a mixed-up thing. There's some longer pieces in there and some shorter pieces in there, you know, and... some poems about a good friend of mine who's just has the worst love life you can ever imagine, you know. Everything goes to shit. But, it's like I won the Beat Museum's poetry contest here a couple of years ago with this long, long, long poem, you know, poem about place. And, they loved it and gave me some dough. So I like that, you know. And then I just won a Kerouac contest here the other day down in Davis, University of Davis, for a longer piece. It's been around a while. I've been reading it for a while. I like the poem, so I've been reading it. But anyway, yeah, you know, that's the thing. It's like you say, it's well written, you know. That's the trick, you know. You got to work your stuff till it gets tight, you know. And then you got to work enough stuff that when you first start writing, it's halfway there already, you know. I deal with a lot of young folks and stuff and emerging people, and, you know, they just develop. They got the talent, but they just need to put the skill on it, you know, and that's just a matter of practice. So. I hear a lot of stuff anymore. It's just, you know, people got to get past just writing the journal entries, you know, and the rants and the manifestos, you know, and that thing about being a sage, you know, I spoke to God, you know, well, good God, you spoke to God, don't talk to me, man. It scared me, you know. That kind of stuff, you know. Well, yeah, you know. So I've been doing this, been in this racket for a long time, had a lot of fun, and still do, you know, travel around, get all over the country, and bang around, and enjoy a lot of other people's stuff, too, you know, so that's always nice.
So there's a lot of time, so there's what else do you, you mentioned Brodigan, who I was turned on to a couple years ago myself, and Who else has moved you? I mean, they could be dead guys or living people now. It doesn't matter.
Well, the guys I like right now, I really like Philip Levine. He's an older guy. Hell, he's older than me. And he's in his 80s. He was our National Poet Laureate for a little while. He quit. That was really cool. You know, I mean, he got pissed off at Congress and said, hey, fuck you guys. You know, this is my racket. But he's a little bit of an academic, but he came out of the workforce, you know. He was working back in Detroit, you know, auto worker and that kind of stuff when he was younger. And he still carries a lot of those feelings and sentiments with him. So, and he's a wonderful writer, and he's got some wonderful things to say. And another guy I really liked that's still kicking around was a former poet laureate, too, is that Ted Kooser. You know, I think that's how you pronounce the name, Ted Kooser. And, you know, he writes some straight up, you know, stuff. It's more almost storytelling the way he writes. It's really, and he's you know, these guys are all use brevity. You know, they're brief with their words. You know, they don't, you know, they don't try to fill up the page. You know, the bottom line is we're poets. We're not journalists. You know, journalists fill the page up. You know, we fill the heart. You know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, those guys, I love those guys. I like Neely Tchaikovsky. He's a very dear friend, you know, and I do a lot of stuff with him. I like Al Winans. I like his political stuff, and, you know, he's a wild old guy, you know, and he's older than I am, too, and he's still kicking around, you know. He'll be 77 in January, and I have a good time with him. Me and him do a lot of stuff together, and in fact, I wrote a poem about him here recently. I haven't sent it anywhere yet, but I will. And so those are kind of the guys I'm kicking around, you know. A lot of the guys I like, though, they're novelists and stuff, too. You know, William Kennedy I really loved, you know. Remember Ironweed? Kind of stuff? Yeah, he wrote that. He wrote what they call him the... Oh, there's that city in upstate New York. I forgot. Albany. The Albany stories, you know. There was a bunch of them. Billy Phelan's greatest Game or something like that. And those kind of things. And he's a wonderful, wonderful writer. And there's a couple of new guys around, too, you know. They're not really new guys, I guess, but they're younger, your age. And there's this kid, Nick Flynn. He writes some poems, and he's written a couple of memoirs, you know, about his dad. His dad's a homeless guy. In fact, they made a movie out of it. You know, one of his.
He wrote another bullshit night in Suck City.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And anyway, yeah, he enjoy his stuff. There's another guy, and I forgot his name. He wrote a book called Damascus out of Frisco. He's out of Frisco, teaches down there. It's about a bar down there in the Tenderloin area. That's another guy I also like. I like that Bill Taylor, you know, the young guy, real gentle soul, like this guy, you know. I don't know if you know him very well, but he's a real soft touch kind of guy, you know. I don't know that there's an angry bone in him, you know. There probably is, you know, if he's offended enough, but he's a real gentle kind of soul, and he writes some wonderful stuff. He writes of place, you know, his neighborhood, his the bars he hangs out with, the people he knows, you know. And I've had him read for me. He's just great. So anyway, those are the guys that I enjoy right now. And there's a couple of young women in there too, you know. There's this gal, you interviewed her here a while back, what's her name? Kate Benzini. Is that her name? Kat Benzini.
Kat Benitez.
Benitez, yeah. I enjoy her. And the reason I really enjoy her is because she writes poems, you know. She doesn't do rants. She doesn't do this, you know, this mantra things, you know, any of that kind of stuff. She actually writes poems, and they're pretty good stuff if you sit down and listen to her, you know, or read her stuff. And, so, yeah, there's a lot of people I enjoy. In fact, most people I enjoy, you know. I mean, there's some people they listen to and I go, Jesus Christ, you know, this is going to be an early night, man. But, you know, others, you know, I sit with, you know, I'm reading, who am I reading right now? Philip Schultz on a Pulitzer in 208. It's out of New York there someplace. He's got some good stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff. And, I mean, what do you mean by, like, rants? Like, fuck the system kind of shit? Is that what you mean by rant?
Rant, typically, most rants are kind of, and the same thing with most, you know, we have a whole ton of genres that we deal with, you know, that we, especially when you're putting on shows, you know. But you kind of, you know, you have the performance poets, and they typically write either, and I'm going to say, and I'm saying this with a wide brush, too. They typically write mantras, you know. I'm this way because my mother was a dope fiend and my father was a drunk and he beat the neighbor's dog. And if I ever see you beating the neighbor's dog, I'm going to beat you. And that's just the way I am. You know, well, okay, who gives a fuck? And the rants are typically, you know, start out talking about one thing and end up talking about, you know, start out talking about your mother and end up talking about, you know, a planetary disaster out on Mars. You know, we lost the rover or some fucking thing. I mean, it's just, they don't go anyplace. It's just words, you know. And,
no,
it's not.
Yeah, I can.
You know, so, you know, in a, you know, I hear a lot of young people do those, you know, because they're pissed off. People are pissed off, you know. And so they tell you what they kind of tell you what they're pissed off, but by the time they're done, it doesn't make any sense, you know. And you go, well, thanks for sharing.
Yeah, that's one thing I think that, like you mentioned earlier, that it's important to practice, which is something that myself I've done in North Dakota for 3 years, like, because I, like you, was bopping around the country for a long time, and but then I got locked up here, and I'm like, practicing is very important. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you keep on, you know, you got to have some goals for your work, you know, and it's, and you got to have some things that you think about, you know, I mean, you know, the things that kind of stay with you all the time, you know, and I got a couple of those things that I can't kick off, you know, but you know, I'm always striving for clarity, you know, I mean, you know, it's, there's this idea, and it's, you ever heard of the idea of the invisible hand, the invisible shadow?
No.
Okay, the concept is that me or you, as a writer, a poet, a performer, okay, our responsibility is to share something with somebody, and when we do, it's clear to the point that it doesn't need explanation. The audience gets it, okay? And the audience's responsibility is to focus enough on what we are saying, what we are sharing, what we're writing, that what they hear doesn't need explanation. They get it. So it's the same as putting your two hands together, you know, your thumbs together, you know, palm to palm. And no matter which way you turn them, you only get one shadow. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So you have the palm. Person giving the poem, the person receiving the poem, but they only have one shadow. There's only one thing being said, and everybody understands it when the hands are together like that. So, you know, that's the search for clarity. And the other part of that, you know, is you, me, everybody. You need them, you know. We all need editors. You have to find somebody in your life that you trust looking at your stuff. And somebody that you can take the criticism from, you know. I have a couple of them, And I use Annie Minnenbrooker all the time. She can be very brutal with my stuff, but generally my stuff's been worked a little bit before it goes out, you know. And I mean, there's a few poems I have. She says, don't ever read those in public again, you know, those kind of things. And she's right, you know, they're not good.
I live with a English major graduate writer herself that edits everything I do, so I agree that it's nice to have another pair of eyes.
Yeah, you know, so you go there, you know, and that's one side of it. And then the other thing is, like I said, you have to have something that, you know, find something in the world that pulls up some importance of you or something that just bugs you, you know. Right now, I've been dealing with this concept of time for a long time, you know. It pisses me off a bit, you know. Because the idea is that, you know, you're in your mid-30s, I'm in my mid-60s, you know. And you know, though we're speaking today, we're still out of sync, you know. If we made two lines on a graph, you know, mine would be a little bit longer than yours, and yours would be, and we could never get those exactly in sync because I can't pull back, you can't pull up. In other words, we may have similar experiences, but they're never the same. And so what happens is there's a lot of people in the world, for me, that you'd like to connect with, but, you know, time hasn't allowed that to happen. And that pisses me off. So I'm thinking time travel would be a good thing, you know. So, you know, we indulge in other things to get us that time travel sometimes. But, it's all, you know, it's all where you want to go with your work, what you want to do, how you want to present it. You know, I love poems. There's a couple of gals I write back and forth. We write love poems together. I have a dear friend, Pat Hickerson, and she's in her early 80s, you know. And she's a character, man. I mean, she's great. She's beautiful. She's wonderful. Little short gal, and she wrote for Penthouse for years. I don't know. You're probably too young. They used to have a Penthouse Forum, it was called. His own separate little magazine, you know. And it was a little magazine. It wasn't big, like an 8.5 by 11, you know. It was a little magazine. And people were supposed to send in questions about their love life, and she'd answer them, you know. Well, the thing was that she was the person sending in the questions, and she was the person answering it. She was the whole thing, you know, for years. So she wrote all this pornographic material. This was wonderful. So anyway, we write love poems to each other. And see, we're just a little bit out of sync in that time, you know. But, you know, so that's where you go. Yeah, you got to find people you trust with your work, you know, that you can share with before you go throwing it out there in the world, you know.
Now, when you mentioned...
You got to be brave, too, and just throw it out there, you know.
When you mentioned, like, clarity, now, when you're talking about clarity, do you mean, like... kind of like to the point, like, say, like a Lee Poe or Bukowski or Clarity, like where the whole, you know, where everybody understands, like it's a universal kind of theme or something. I mean, I don't.
Oh, it's just clarity of language, you know.
Okay.
When I say something, that's what I'm saying, you know. That one of the things is, too, is I'm a very pragmatic guy, so I don't fuck around with a lot of stuff, you know. When I say something, that's kind of what I mean, you know. There's not a lot of. You know, there's this kind of fallacy that we write in metaphors, you know, and we don't. We seldom do, I should say. It's not that we don't. We seldom do. We mostly write in simile. You know, something is like. You know, the difference between a metaphor and a simile, you know, a metaphor is my love is a red, red rose, you know, and simile is my love is like a red, red rose. You see the difference there?
Yeah.
So when we're striving for clarity, that's what we want to do. You know, I'm not trying to hide anything or disguise anything in a metaphor, you know, or use some other, you know, block of reality as to mean what I'm saying. I'm just going to tell you what I want you to hear is, or what I'm trying to make you understand and hope you do. And so, you know, and work toward that clarity in your poems and your language to do that, you know. And also is, you know, is to take out all the fluff, You know, there's a lot of people often get too wordy in their poems. You know, there's a lot of, it's like, what does the word that mean? You know,
yeah.
We all use it. What does it mean? You know, so it means nothing. You know, it's just filler. So, you know, the thing is, you know, in my work, I try to minimize it. And though I do use it a lot, you know, but I try to minimize its use, you know. That. Think about that word, that. What the hell does that mean, you know? It doesn't mean anything.
Well, so why don't you segue into another one of your poems? It could be a long one if you want, or whatever you want.
Well, let's see what I got. Here's a Patty poem right here, Pat poem. And it's got the word that in it, too, you know. So it's called Pat. She wrote a new book. I got it laying around here someplace. It's My Torment Rachel, I think it's called. It's wonderful. It's a little tiny book. Anyway, it's called Patsy. I read your book last night. Had to sit a while, was glad to be alone. You said I'm frightened without your voice. And I felt it, the hollowness of lonely. I wanted to hold you, fill you up with who I am, make you think the only weakness, my only weakness is loving you. But I'm not that strong. Did I thank you for the kiss? Clarity.
Yeah, I totally understand what you mean. I totally get that. Go ahead.
How about here's a short one that I've just been tinkering with, but I think it's done, you know. There's not a lot to it. But a short one. And it's kind of, you know, true story, man. You know, true story. It's called Closing Shop. The last thing I do at night is put my gun on the mouse pad. Don't worry, I have another one on my nightstand.
Yeah, that's like, there's a lot of like, when I read your book, a lot of cleverness and not taking yourself overly too serious either, which I noticed that a lot of the younger people in their 20s or whatnot take themselves completely serious. I'm not saying you don't take your writing serious. I'm just saying there's a humor and a cleverness to it, I think.
Well, you know, that gets down to kind of your philosophy about your writing, your particular writing, you know, and who you are as a, or not who you are, but what you do as a writer. And my belief is that, and I have a dear friend, Frank Godrick, and we work together. We do radio together down in Frisco all the time, and we do shows together and stuff. And we have this consummate argument going on. He believes that the stage is a sacred place, and I don't. You know, I think that the biggest thing we do is we're entertainers, you know. And what is the bottom line, what an entertainer does? He helps you waste your time. So at the end of the evening, if you can look out on the crowd, you know, and know you help these people waste their time and we're a success out of it, and leave and enjoy the evening, you've been a success. You know, the idea of value added is sometimes, you know, sometimes we write something, sometimes we read something, sometimes we do something that's value added. You know, there's those little things. But most of those things are more one-on-one, they're more personal, you know. It's like you in the morning, you know, you tell your wife, hey, has anybody told you they love you today? And she says, no, and you say, I do, you know, those kind of things, you know. I tell Frank, you know, hey, the reason I will live forever is you. You know, you're making that happen. You know, you're doing radio, man. You're putting me out there. The reason I will live forever is you. You know, you tell that to your wife and you tell that to your kids. And you know, there's some people that will never live forever, you know, but some people will. Those kind of things. And the other part of it is, too, you know, like, you know, this concept of being an entertainer. like I said, when you're on the stage, even when you're writing, you know. And that's the quirkiness of your personality as well, and your sense of humor, you know. But there's one thing I truly, truly, truly believe, and other people, they struggle with it because they just haven't, they don't accept these kind of things. But I don't believe the best part of a poet is ever left on the page. Yeah, never. Yeah, it's these things, these inner communications. We're sitting around having a cold drink, and you say something that I go, that's mine now. I'm stealing it, you know. Those are the things, you know. Those are the things. And they kind of slip by, you know. But the best part of a poet is never left on the stage. It's that personal interaction. It comes
Well, Bill, so, we have a caller. We have somebody who wants to talk to you. I don't know who it is.
Oh, we do. Oh,
yeah,
no,
so let's
probably
bring him up. 508
area code. Hey, hi Frank, it's Jeff in Boston. How are you?
I'm all right.
Good, good.
Do you have a question for Bill Gaynor?
Yeah, yeah. First of all, really, really like the work, Mr. Gaynor. Very, very well done. Excellent.
Well, thank you.
Wondering if I could expound upon. Have you expound upon some of the concepts you brought up that I thought were pretty fascinating, especially the invisible man concept there that you had. I found that very intriguing.
Invisible hand, excuse me.
The whole concept between the poet and the poem and also tying that in with your concept of time. And that relationship, I think, is really intriguing. I'd like your thoughts on that because the poem is such a fluid type of thing. It transcends the poet, and it becomes its own entity to whoever reads it. So there's such this three-way relationship between the poem, the reader, and the poem itself. And I was wondering if you could kind of expound upon that.
Yeah, well, you know, what I'll do is I'll kind of repeat what I was talking about. What we're talking about, again, is the singular shadow, one shadow, two hands, one shadow, each hand representing an individual, the writer, the audience, okay? And if you lay these two hands palm to palm together, no matter which way you turn them, which hand is on top, you have one shadow, and it's the same. It looks the same either way. So what the idea, this is kind of a thing that I think Lew Welsh came up with. I think I read it someplace with him. That the idea is that you, as a writer, have a responsibility to the reader to try to be as clear and focused as you can so the work does not need explanation or interpretation. And on the other hand, on the other side of that, you, as the audience, the reader, have a responsibility to the writer to be focused to the point that you get it, you understand what this person, what this writer is trying to come across with. So the idea, you know, we often hear this thing that you kind of mentioned, well, you know, this multi-interpretation. Well, if that's happening, somebody's not doing their job, you know. I just read, a dear friend of mine, I just read a thing that she put up, and she wrote a story about one of her personal experiences, and somebody else thought it was something else altogether. They missed it, you know. So somebody wasn't clear in the way they either presented their work or they read it. So it's a very important job we have, you know, if you're going to take on those kind of jobs, because you're just not throwing stuff out there, you know, for the sake of just jabbering, you know. I mean, you're trying to communicate with somebody, you know, with somebody, you know. We often say communicate with the world, but most poets are just regional guys, you know, so their stuff gets out in the local paper, and that's wonderful. So that's kind of what that is. And this idea of time is that, again, we're all out of sync a little bit, you know. I can't live your time. You can't live my time, you know. And so, you know, we're never exactly thinking about the same thing in the same way, which can confuse things unless you try to focus into that space and that moment of time that the person is trying to communicate with you about.
So and that's why I was trying to bring those two together. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was trying to bring those two together in the sense that the multi-interpretations of the poem, I know the clarity should be, you know, direct, and it should be right there for the reader to grasp it, but they're bringing their own baggage, if you will, or their own experiences and imagination to that, so it's opening up a whole nother world for that poem. In other words, it can't, and there's where the time issue comes in, because now you're bridging it. You see, because what you're writing can go to somebody else and become a completely different experience.
What I'm saying
if you follow me.
It's your job as a writer to try not to let that happen. You're trying to communicate one thing, you know. I'm not all-encompassing. I'm not a god. I don't throw the fucking stars in the sky, for Christ's sakes. I tell you, hey, I love you, man. You know, how that love happens, that's your business, you know. But, hey, I love you, man. So that's not a complicated thing to say. It's not a complicated thing to interpret. But, you know, you might have different ways of believing what love is, and that's okay with me. So, you know, the idea, you know, when I tell somebody that, you know, hey, I got a gun on the nightstand, that's pretty clear. You know, I'm going off to my dreams now. Leave me alone. You know, that kind of thing. So, no, you know, and on the other side, the bottom line on all this stuff is, you know, for the caller, for Jeff, I think it is that it's kind of like, who cares, you know? If you enjoy the poem and it means something to you for a little bit, good. That's a good deal, you know? So, I mean, you take that with you wherever you want to go. So, you know, it's
all right. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. So what else are we doing?
Yeah, go into another poem.
Okay. How about Magdalena's Prototype?
All right.
You want to hear a bunch of Latinos, a bunch of Mexican guys, assholes snap shut in Albuquerque? Read them this poem. Albuquerque. I was just up in Albuquerque with that gang of yours. I had a ball. They're wonderful people, all that whole bunch. They go 100 miles. I don't know how they do it, man. I go home, go to bed, you know, and let them guys go. But had a wonderful time. It's wonderful shows up there. Magdalena's Prototype. Those suicide legs, T's and thighs, thin ankles. The creator wasn't fucking around that morning. He must have had a good night. I can hear him now in that Mexican accent. Jesus, check this out. There you go. One more stuff?
Yeah, read us another.
Okay, I'll read you a little longer piece. These have been around a little bit. I've been working these, so that's why I've been reading them here and there. It's called Leftovers. They were really just drunken brawls, Betty and Arthur's, Mom and her second husband's little get-togethers. Something else broken, a new stain, a half-naked lady on the couch in the morning, stumbling through her hangover getaway, trying to for the door before any more of us kids showed up. Sometimes they'd ask, how many of you are there? Or if we'd help find a shoe, a stocking, a missing purse. One time my little sister fell asleep curled up on the hall chair. Someone covered her with a jacket. And as people came, they kept piling their coats and sweaters on the chair until she was gone. My brothers and I searched. The revelers had other concerns. The next morning we found her, still sleeping on the chair among the leftovers. And there were always leftovers. There you go.
Nice. You see, I brought my own interpretation to that.
What's that?
You see, I brought my own interpretation to that. Just kidding.
There
I won't
you
make
go
that joke.
Good.
It's
bottom
strong
line, did you smile a little bit, you know?
So,
okay.
Bill, here's like the boring question. Like, well, good for you, but, you know, I'm sure people ask you this a lot, but where can anybody get your stuff? Like, if they want your stuff or want to find out more about your stuff, because we have people listening.
Stuff is all on Amazon. They can always find stuff there. I did a little book, one of those little red books a while back with Lummix, you know. I was very happy with that. You know, he wants to do one of the bigger things that he does, but I was just thrilled when he said, well, let me do one of the little red books, and he did that, and that was great. And I was proud to be part of that series. He's got a lot of names in there that I really respect. So you can get a hold of Lummix in there. I don't know what one it is, 58 or something like that. I'm way at the end of the list. And then there's another little joint out here on the coast called the Rattlesnake Press. I got a couple little chapbooks with them. So, but you can find Roxy online. It's with Bill Gaynor, Todd Cirillo, and Will Staple. And you can also find the little book, A Note in the Window. It's there. And there's going to be another one coming out. It's going to be called The Fine Art of Poisoning. It'll probably be around the first of the year sometime, maybe a little after that. It'll probably be on Amazon, too. And you can always go to my website, you know, which is just BillGaynor.com. Check things out. It hasn't been updated in a little bit. Or you can go to R.L. Crow, that's R.L.C.R.O.W.com. Check things out there, too. So,
that's cool, man.
All around. And I'm reading all around. You know, I try to slow down this time of year, but we've been going pretty strong yet. So,
you did the Albuquerque thing, right? You did Albuquerque, right? I wasn't able to make it to that one.
Yeah, I can't hardly hear you. That's because of you and me.
Oh, sorry. No, it was probably me. I had my finger on the phone in the wrong way. But did you? You went to Albuquerque, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I had a ball up there with those guys. The altitude or something got to me the second day. I didn't feel as well as I was hoping I would, you know. But I had a good time, you know. And it's a lot of fun just watching those guys, man. They go crazy, you know. They like to have their indulgences and stay up all night and go for it. And then they do. And then they read some good poems, you know. I was thrilled. Steve Goldberg really rocked me this time. And then there was this young gal named Ellie Portnoy that I really enjoyed. And then another gal... two real tall gals, and heck, I can't remember their names. One of them gave me a book here, and I read it, and I enjoyed that. Those guys too. She was from Alabama, come all the way out teaching back there. And, it was really good. And then Frankie had some good stuff. I enjoyed what he read, and then he just hosted the second night. I didn't get to hear him read, and Michelle even read, and that was nice too. And then they had this killer band the second night. Jeez, they really tore it up. I don't know where they found them. There's some local group or something, but they were just wild and fun, you know. Albuquerque was a good trip, but, you know, Albuquerque is not my town, you know. It's big and flat and clean, you know, very clean.
that whole reading that we all did out in Oakland.
I can hardly hear you again, man.
Oh, sorry. That whole reading we did out in Oakland was a long one, too. That was a week long. I was burnt out. I'm starting to feel almost 40 now.
I still can't hardly hear you, Frank.
Oh, okay. Hold on. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
I need more, man.
All right, hold on. Let me try to turn this up. How about now?
That's okay, I guess. It's still kind of weak, man.
I can hear you perfect. So I turned up my phone louder. So hopefully that will work.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was like an interesting event that Saturday, running around the town reading in 50 different places in a day.
Oh yeah, I had a good time at that deal too. That was wonderful, you know. And I always enjoy, you know, when that gang invites me any place, I like to go, you know. And like I said, this time here, the second day, I was getting a little, I don't know if it was the altitude or the you know, it was the day that all that time was changing, you know. You're going to New Mexico and the time changes, and then it was daylight saving time and all that shit too. So, but, you know, we read and had a good time and had lots of fun, met some nice people, and had an enjoyable stay, you know.
Yeah, that's definitely a good time. I think they're doing something in Chicago this winter. I don't know.
Yeah, she was talking about maybe doing something. Man, I can hardly hear you, Frank. I mean,
All right. Oh, what the hell is that, man?
I don't know. Somebody trying to call in, maybe. Yeah, she said something about that, something back east or something. She said she wants to do, you know, try to do one more big one and then maybe just do some smaller things. I don't know. Yeah. But that's a lot of work what those guys do, you know. And, thing in Oakland, I only read it three of them down there, and I had a ball at all three of them, but I heard you guys read it like five or six different venues and stuff. Or,
no, I read it the same. Yeah, they did. I just read it the same exact three venues that you read at. I did. Right. I just watched the other ones. I didn't want to. You know, you only bring so many poems. I don't want to read the same damn poems over and over again.
I think that. Paul Corman Roberts, he set up a lot of readings for for everybody to come out and have a good time. I mean, he surprised me how organized he was, man. He had it happening.
Yeah.
And it was all a good crowd.
I said Chicago would be a good one because I can actually take a train there for a cheap price.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I can't hardly hear you, man. You know, you keep
all
going
right, well,
away. There you go. That's better.
All right. Maybe I'm just going to stand in this one spot. there's like 5 minutes left, so if you want to like take us out with some poems, that'd be great.
Yeah, maybe. You know, I kind of like to have. There's a poem here I haven't read. It's for an old friend I haven't read in a long time. You know. Maybe I'll,
okay.
You ever hear The Wrong Side of Dirt?
No.
An old friend. It's for a guy, you'll hear it, man. It's called The Wrong Side of Dirt. This is an old friend, Bob, was glad to see that someone, probably his sister, the one from up in Reno, had finally placed the headstone. After wiping the snow and reading the inscription, James Robin Gardner Bob, an extraordinary artist, a creative thinker. March 19, 1951, April 21, 2005. I thought, this is it, huh? The guy was once somebody. He'd won one of the big ones, an Academy Award, way back when, for a stop-motion animated short film thing he did in college. I heard it was downhill from there. But the world was an alien place. It didn't love him as much as we did. His sister said he took the dark way out, a piece of cord, a rented room, the city cop pushing the door open, him hanging there, done. She said because of the way he left, the priest wouldn't bury him. So they did some kind of Indian thing, burnt some sage, banged on some drums, and chanted something that meant something to somebody, who knows. After all the crap, the craziness, the booze, the dope, the good times, the bad, the women, the fighting, the falling in love. I always loved the falling in love. Even the meds. Yeah, they put you on the meds when they think you've gone a little goofy. After all of it, here I am, an old man, standing in the snow talking to an old friend who's long gone, wondering which one of us is truly on the wrong side of the dirt.
There wow, man. Yeah, thank you for that. That was really good, man. Yeah, yeah. On that note, I'd like to just thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I had a good time. My cold didn't bother me. My nose didn't run, so I'm doing okay. So something, maybe you're making me feel better, Frank. Maybe I should call more often.
And I'll probably, more than likely, probably see you on the road next year sometime. I'm sure we'll connect at some of the same events.
I look forward to it. I'd like to get back to Toledo, back to John Dorsey's country back there.
I think he lives in Kansas City now, John Dorsey.
They're a good bunch. I've had John out here in California a couple of times reading, and he's a wonderful guy. You know, wonderful.
Yeah,
guy.
He's a great guy.
Anyway, well, thanks for having me, Frank, and I'll talk to you later.
All right, no problem. Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, that was Bill Gaynor, and wow, just all around wow. I love Bill's work, and it was nice hearing his views and his philosophy. So check out Amazon or BillGaynor.com if you like what you heard for some of his books. And or you can find him on Facebook. If you don't have him on Facebook, you can ask me and I can send you to him, and you know, he could direct you to his work or where he's reading and stuff like that. I'm pretty sure next week my guest is S.A. Griffin. Don't hold me to that. I don't know yet. I don't have my list in front of me and I've forgotten. But anyways, what the fuck ever.